You're listening to Radio MD. She's a chiropractic, holistic physician, best-selling author, international speaker, entrepreneur, and talk show host. She's Dr. Suzanne Bennett. It's time now for Wellness for Life Radio. Here's Dr. Suzanne.
Autoimmune disease, it's a major, major health problem. The National Institute of Health estimates up to 23.5 million Americans suffer from autoimmune conditions, but I should say autoimmune diseases. But the American Autoimmune Related Disease Association believes that 50 million Americans suffer from autoimmune disease. Now, that's a big discrepancy, and that the prevalence is rising. Now, I've been in practice for 27 years, and every year there's no doubt I see more and more people walking into my office with autoimmune conditions. Now, today, you know, that this is like, what, 10 years ago? We didn't have as much Hashimoto's, celiac, lupus, multiple sclerosis, all of these conditions. And what we are going to talk about today is with Dr. Thomas O'Brien, author of The Autoimmune Fix, a groundbreaking book that outlines a step-by-step development of degenerative diseases and gives us the tools to identify our disease process years before the symptoms are obvious. Thank you so much for being here on Wellness for Life Radio, Dr. Tom.
Oh, Dr. Suzanne, it's such a pleasure to be with you. You are such a bundle of happiness. And every time I think of you, I just get a big smile. So thanks for the opportunity to be with you.
Yes. I'm really excited about your book. And thanks so much for giving me a copy of it. I know it's coming out, and I'm so excited because it's got amazing information. What I loved the way you written it also was about your story, how you dealt with a lot of problems, inflammatory problems, and you got to the root of it. Can you just briefly go into that story of yours before we start on autoimmune?
Sure. Well, it started 36 years ago. I didn't know that this was the beginnings, but it was, when my ex and I could not get pregnant. And I called the seven most famous holistic doctors I'd ever heard of. I was an intern at the time, and I asked, what do you guys do? And they all told me what they do. I put a program together. We were pregnant in 6 weeks. And my neighbors, we lived in married housing at the time on campus, they asked if I'd work with them, and they'd been through artificial insemination. Nothing had worked. And I said, well, sure, of course. And, I don't know if it's going to help, but I certainly won't harm you, and you'll feel better. And they were pregnant in 3 months. So I came out into practice hot to trot. I mean, to help every couple that wanted to get pregnant. And we found that there's not much in medicine that's all or every. There's not much, but this is an every. Every person that had hormone-related complaints, every single person had foods that they were eating that they didn't know were a problem for them. And those foods, we now know the mechanisms. We didn't know back then. But first I'll say, with every single person, they were eating foods. If it didn't make them sick, they thought they were fine. Yet when we looked more closely, the foods were causing inflammation. Now, inflammation, every disease, every degenerative disease is inflammatory at the cellular level. Every single one. At the cell level, you're always inflamed. And it just depends on which tissue it is. Is it your brain and you get Alzheimer's or Parkinson's or attention deficit or seizures or autism? Is it your liver and you get detoxification problems and you can't break down your hormones and keep balance very well in your hormones and you accumulate lots of toxic chemicals because your liver can't break it down? Is it your kidneys? Is it your joints? Is it your skin? It just depends on where the weak link is in your chain, but it's always inflammation. And what we found was that every single couple that had hormone-related concerns had foods that they were eating that were gasoline on the fire triggering the inflammation. When we went deeper into this over the years, what I found in the science is that when you have foods that you're sensitive to and your immune system is making antibodies, those are the soldiers that are trying to protect you from when you're exposed to something that's not good for you. And if your body thought that wheat is not good for you and you make these antibodies to fight wheat, that it's called molecular mimicry. So if I've got antibodies to wheat, then I'm very vulnerable to making antibodies to my own tissue that kind of looks like the protein structure of wheat. And so you, for many people, it's their thyroid, and they make antibodies to their thyroid. For others, it's in their brain. For me, it was in my brain. I had three different types of brain tissue that my immune system was making antibodies to. The first one was myelin, and that's the mechanism that causes eventually MS. When you kill off enough myelin, you get MS. The next one was cerebellum. And that's an area of the brain that controls muscle movement. It's why older people can't walk gracefully up and down the stairs. You know, they got to hold the rail and be careful and not lose their balance. And the third one was called gangliosides, and that causes your brain to shrink. That the antibodies cause damage to the tissue over the years. That's the autoimmune mechanism. And it very, very commonly is triggered by foods that people are eating that they don't know they're sensitive to, that the immune system's trying to protect you and making antibodies to those foods.
Well, you know, in your book, you go into that in detail, which is awesome. But you know what? One of the things that I know a lot of people that are listening here on Wellness for Life are going to say that, you know, I've been diagnosed with autoimmune disease.
Yes.
I've been diagnosed with these types of conditions. And they're pretty much lost because there's not a lot of treatment options, are there?
Oh, my goodness. We now know, and this has been, this book is my 30 years, and it's the only book I've ever written. You know, it's my whole professional life experience. And I just quote, I quote the studies. And as you know, I've been on stage for the last 15 years. I lecture 25 to 40 times a year to professional groups all over the world on this topic. And we now know the science is really clear that there is a mechanism, a common mechanism in the development of every autoimmune disease they look at, whether it's Alzheimer's or Parkinson's or lupus or MS or Hashimoto's thyroid, that there is a mechanism that is the same. The first, it's a trilogy. The first in the trilogy is the genes, that you're genetically vulnerable to that particular disease. Nothing you can do about the genes. That's the deck of cards that you were dealt in life. That's your deck of cards. That's what you've got. But that doesn't mean you're going to get the symptom or the condition. It just means you're vulnerable to that condition. Second is an environmental trigger, something that sets it off, something that you've been exposed to that activates those genes for the vulnerability that you have. And the most common environmental trigger is the foods that we eat. That's the most common. But there are many others, lead and mercury and toxic chemicals. There are many, but the most common is food. And third is a gut that's out of balance. When your intestines is called the microbiome, the good bacteria in the gut, you know, we have this whole world inside our guts that has so much control over how our brains function and all of that. But it's the environment of the gut. That's the third component. And when you have an imbalanced environment in the gut, you set up what's called leaky gut, or the technical term is pathogenic intestinal permeability. And many scientists have now written research papers that say you can arrest, and that's their language, arrest the development of autoimmune disease across the board by healing the gut. So learning what your gut microbiome is made of, how are you feeding it, how are you taking care of it, you know, do you throw Coca-Cola down there and ding-dongs and ho-hos and expect to have a healthy gut, or, you know, are you using vegetables? I mean, there's so many things to learn on this. And this book outlines the entire step-by-step sequence of how do you get the big picture of what's going on for you and your family. How do you get the big picture? And then how do you start to dial down? How do you begin the process of changing the direction that your health is going in?
Great. You know, one of the things that I read in your book, The Autoimmune Fix, was that you make a distinction between autoimmune disease and autoimmune condition. Can you tell us what that is, the differences,
so that
people out there can understand that? Yes.
You bet. That is so important because this is where you get the power over this. And there was a research article published back in 2003 in the New England Journal of Medicine by Dr. Melissa Arbuckle. She's an MD, PhD. She went to the VA and she looked for people with lupus, the autoimmune disease lupus. She found 132 people there in this one VA center with lupus. Now, if they're in the VA, they're veterans. If they're veterans, they were in the armed forces. If they were in the armed forces, they had their blood drawn many times over the years when they were in the armed forces. And what most people don't know is that the government's been saving all of that blood and freezing it since 1978. They've got tens of millions of samples of our service people's blood. So Arbuckle went back to the VA and asked for permission to look at some of the blood of the people currently diagnosed with lupus from when they were healthy in the Air Force or in the Navy. And she got permission, so she got the frozen blood, and she went to look and see, did these people have any signs of lupus before they got the diagnosis? And she found in the blood of these 132 people, every single one of them had the antibodies elevated. There are seven antibodies that cause lupus. All seven of them were elevated years and years before they ever had symptoms. Now, in the average was 7 years, and for many of them, it went as far back as 9 years. And some of them were only 20% elevated, which is still terrible, 9 years earlier, and some of them were 60% elevated, but they all rose every year, higher and higher and higher, until they hit a plateau. And then within 6 months or so, they got the symptoms. And then within a year to a year and a half, they get the diagnosis of lupus. Well, the question is, when did they get lupus? They got lupus way back there when the antibodies were elevated, killing off your tissue. See, nobody gets Alzheimer's in their 60s or 70s. You get Alzheimer's in your 20s and 30s. Actually, we now know children have indicators of early Alzheimer's from the environmental exposures to air pollution. So you get these autoimmune diseases years and years in advance. You're on the spectrum, and you're killing off tissue, killing off tissue, killing off tissue. Until you kill off enough tissue, now you start getting symptoms. And when you start getting symptoms, then you go to a doctor saying, I don't feel good. You know, I'm gaining weight, or I don't have any energy, or my brain's not working right, you know, whatever your symptoms are. And the average was it took a year to a year and a half to get the right diagnosis because it was kind of general. It wasn't really clear. But they get the diagnosis eventually of lupus in this case. But it started years and years earlier. So that period before you have symptoms, when your immune system is active, you've got elevated antibodies, higher levels of antibodies, killing off your tissue. That period is called the prodromal period. It's a big Scrabble word, prodromal period, or you're on the autoimmune spectrum on the way to getting the autoimmune disease. So it starts years and years earlier. And our goal, my goal in this book, is that people understand this mechanism because the tests are now available to see, do I have any elevated antibodies to my own tissue? So where is the weak link in my chain? If you pull on a chain, it always breaks at the weakest link. It's a one end, the middle, the other end. It's your heart, your brain, your liver, your kidneys, wherever your genetic weak link is. You can't do anything about the deck of cards you were dealt. But if you check thoroughly to see, do I have any elevated antibodies right now? Many doctors say, oh, don't worry, that's normal. Well, no, it's not. That's why there's an H next to the result. It's high on the lab test. It's high. It's not normal. It's common, and sometimes if doctors don't know what to do, they'll say, oh, don't worry about it, it's normal. Let's just wait and see. We'll check you next year. Well, what are they waiting for? They're waiting for enough tissue damage so that now it becomes obvious, because you've got the symptoms that put you in the category of the diagnosis. But this has been going on for years. And if people if they identify it early, it gives them that window of opportunity to address it before you've got so much tissue damage, you get the diagnosis of a disease.
You know, I'm thinking about one of my patients. This was about 15 years ago, Tom. I've worked a lot with chronic illnesses, and particularly even autoimmune, even back then. And I remember this one patient clearly because I lost this patient, in fact. I lost this patient because I told him that I believed his Hashimoto, he had a thyroiditis issue, was stemming from an inflammation triggered by an infection of Epstein-Barr virus.
Yes.
A component, and I tested him out for the virus. Sure enough, it was high, but he didn't want to listen to me, and I lost him as a patient. He went to another, like a regular medical doctor, which gave him, you know, thyroid hormones, but did not address. So I don't know what happened to this case, but back then, and even 15 years ago, I saw some of this trending going on, which is pathogenic mimicry. You talked about mimicry, meaning like foods can mimic and make our immune system think that it's creating a problem, and that's why we're attacking our own tissues. But so can bugs, right?
That's a really good point, and you are way ahead of the curve of most practitioners 15 years ago identifying that. You're absolutely right. And in that example, the Epstein-Barr virus was the environmental trigger. You know, it's the thing that got in and it propagated, fueled itself, it reproduced. So you do a test and you can see, yep, you're high on the titers. You got lots of Epstein-Barr virus there. And so you're pulling on the chain with the high viral exposure. That's the gasoline on the fire, pulling on the chain. And the weak link in that chain for that fella was his thyroid. And so he manifested the symptoms of Hashimoto's thyroid disease. Well, you treat the thyroid disease, that's like, you know, you're using garden hose to try to put out a bonfire when somebody else is using a garden hose and pouring gasoline on. You know, so giving hormone can be helpful in the short term, but if the Epstein-Barr continues to stay there and pull on the chain of the thyroid, you can't get the results you want. So that's a really good example of the environmental trigger. And now your question about molecular mimicry. Here's how it works. And I'm going to use the example of a vaccination because that's exactly what happens when we have a reaction to particular foods or to a virus or something. So you get a vaccination for measles. They give you a shot of the bug measles. Now your brain says, whoa, what's this in my bloodstream? This is not good for me. I better fight this. You now are General Measles. And you have Army, Air Force, Marine Corps generals in your immune system sitting around with nothing to do. And the brain says, you now are General Measles. Take care of this. General Measles builds an assembly line. The assembly line starts producing soldiers. They're called antibodies. And they are trained to go after measles. Nothing else. They specifically go after measles. So now you've got all these antibodies being produced going into your bloodstream. We like to give the visual of Arnold Schwarzenegger with his head out of a Humvee, and he's got this big submachine gun and those dark glasses on. Here in California, we call him the Governator, right? Mm-hmm. And so now he's going through the bloodstream. He's going, over there, and he's firing these chemical bullets going after measles because that's what he was trained to do. Now, you have to remember your bloodstream is just a highway. You know, it's just a highway, and there's no lanes of traffic, so everything's just bouncing around in there together. So Arnold's bouncing around with all the red blood cells and the white blood cells and all the vitamins and minerals and the proteins that are in the bloodstream, and he's looking for measles. When all the measles bugs have been killed, General Measles, who's watching all of this, says, okay, turn off the assembly line. You don't need more measles antibodies right now. So if anyone who's listening goes and gets a blood test for measles antibodies, you shouldn't have elevated measles antibodies in your bloodstream right now. There's no need, unless you've been exposed. But General Measles becomes vigilant for the rest of his life. General Measles is called a memory B cell, and he's vigilant for the rest of his life. So if measles ever comes back, he just has to flip the switch. He doesn't have to build the assembly line again. That's why if you go to Africa, you need vaccinations months and months ahead of time for yellow fever and dengue fever and all these strange diseases that you might be exposed to. But if you go back to Africa years later, 20 years later, you just need a booster shot 2 weeks before you go, because the booster shot just wakes up general measles, and now you've got more antibodies in your bloodstream to protect you from yellow fever and dengue fever if you're exposed when you're back in Africa again. So that's what happens with Epstein-Barr or with a food that you're sensitive to, like gluten, is that you make these antibodies, then general gluten now turns off the assembly line because, you know, there's no need to have extra antibodies. But anytime you're exposed to wheat, you turn the assembly line back on. Now, so Arnold, these soldiers, these antibodies going through the bloodstream, they're looking for wheat. Let's use the example now of wheat. And wheat, the wheat protein, it's made up of the most common piece of the wheat protein is 33 amino acids long. I'm going to call it AABCD. I'm not going to use 33 letters. I'll just use AABCD. So Arnold's looking for AABCD, going through the bloodstream looking for AABCD. Now, looking for AABCD, as he's going past the thyroid, the inside lining of the thyroid facing the bloodstream is made up of proteins and fats. So that surface on the inside lining of the thyroid is made up of proteins and fats. The proteins are hundreds of amino acids long, which includes AABCD. So Arnold's looking for AABCD, and he's got those dark glasses on, but he's going, firing his chemical bullets. Now he sees the thyroid, the inside lining of the thyroid, AABCD, and he fires a chemical bullet over there, and you fire a chemical bullet at your thyroid. Now you've damaged the thyroid cell. Now your immune system has to make antibodies to get rid of that damaged cell. We always have a few antibodies for thyroid and for brain and for liver. There's a normal reference range if you get the test done, because we always have some damaged cells, you know, and some old cells. You got to get rid of the old ones to make room for the new ones. It's always the case. But now Arnold has damaged some extra thyroid cells, so you make some extra thyroid antibodies to get rid of the damaged thyroid cells. Not a problem, except you have toast for breakfast. You make AABCD antibodies. You have a sandwich for lunch. You make AABCD antibodies. You have pasta for dinner. You make AABCD antibodies. You have a bagel the next day, AABCD antibodies. A cookie, AABCD antibodies. Croutons on your salad, AABCD antibodies. And Arnold keeps going after the weak link in your chain, which is your thyroid in this example. So he's also attacking your thyroid. And now you make more thyroid antibodies to clean out the damage from the molecular mimicry of Arnold going after wheat by getting confused that the surface of the thyroid looks like wheat. And so you're killing off more thyroid cells. You make more thyroid antibodies, more thyroid antibodies, more thyroid antibodies, until it becomes a self-perpetuating mechanism. And now you develop Hashimoto's thyroid disease that came initially from wheat. That is the molecular mimicry that occurs with Epstein-Barr, like the patient you were talking about, or with dairy sensitivity. With dairy, it's very common to go after antibodies to your brain, and it can cause MS and other brain diseases if you have antibodies to milk or to dairy products. With wheat, it goes after your brain or your joints or your kidneys or your liver. There are many, many different tissues it might go after. And now you develop this autoimmune mechanism where your immune system's attacking yourself, and just depending on where the weak link in your chain is. And when you keep attacking that weak link in your chain, your brain, your kidneys, your thyroid, your liver, wherever it is, and now you get these autoimmune symptoms, you finally go to it, and this goes on for years. Remember, 7 to 9 years for lupus in our Buckles article. This goes on for years until eventually you get symptoms, and eventually a doctor gives you the diagnosis you have an autoimmune disease. You have Hashimoto's thyroiditis. Here's thyroid medication. Well, the medication is like the garden hose of water trying to put out the fire while AABCD is gasoline still going onto the fire. That The medications can help in the short term, and they're good to use depending on the condition you've got, but in the long term, they can't fix the problem. And here's an example of that. In one study that was published in 2014, they looked at people with Hashimoto's thyroiditis, and they found those that had a sensitivity to wheat, when they took them off of wheat completely, no cheating, when they took them off of wheat, within 6 months, every single person was able to reduce the level of thyroid medication that they needed by an average of 49% by getting wheat out of their diet. Every single person who had a sensitivity to wheat on a blood test, not every Hashimoto's patient, but every Hashimoto's patient that had a sensitivity to wheat. So for those people, the weak link in their chain causing the molecular mimicry reaction was wheat. For somebody else, it could be spinach causing problems with your eyes, or it could be soy, or it could be dairy. That it's overwhelming when you start looking at all the research on this. That's why this book is just a step-by-step progression in getting the big picture of understanding this. And when you understand this for yourself and your family, you now know the questions to ask, you know, and where to look. Anytime you've got a condition that the efforts you're putting out to get healthier are not working, anytime. It doesn't matter what the condition is. You're really trying your best. You're following your doctor's advice. You're doing the best that you can and being squeaky clean, and you're not getting the results you want. You must think, could there be an autoimmune mechanism going on here causing these symptoms? As you said at the beginning of the show, it is the number one mechanism in getting sick.
Well, Tom, thanks so much. Autoimmune Fix, that's where you gotta all read this book, Autoimmune Fix. Dr. Tom O'Brien, thank you so much. This is Dr. Suzanne sharing natural strategies for ultimate health and wellness right here on Radio MD. Until next time, stay well. Thank you, Dr. Tom.